expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Problems, problems, problems all day long. Will my problems work out right or wrong? My baby don't like anything I do. My teacher seems to
Good morning, Fairbanks and North Pole. This is Aaron Lojeski. I'm your guest host in today on KFAR Problem Corner. You're listening to 660 AM. I've got two guests in the studio here. We have the borough clerk and we have the city of Fairbanks clerk. And we're planning on talking mostly about local elections and a lot about the mechanics of the elections, when to vote, how you can vote, how to be a poll worker, et cetera, et cetera. So, how about introductions? April, you're the borough clerk. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Good morning. I'm April Tricky. I am the Fairbanks North Star borough clerk, and I'm happy to be here today.
Good morning. I'm happy to accompany April and Aaron. I'm Danny Snyder. I'm the city clerk at the city of Fairbanks, just right around the corner.
Okay. So, what I would like to ask about first is just a quick briefer. And I personally, I know a lot more about the borough's clerk's office because I was on the borough assembly for 6 years. But what does the borough clerk's office do?
Well, the borough clerk's office, we have actually a lot of different hats that we wear. A lot of people see us during assembly meetings. We staff the assembly meetings as their clerk, as their parliamentarian. We also staff as the clerk for the boards and commission meetings that are held in the assembly chambers for the borough. We administer the elections, which is one of the things we're going to talk about today for our municipal elections each year. And the other thing that a lot of people don't know that we do is we manage the records management for the borough, records management.
Records management. And how about the Fairbanks clerk's office for the Fairbanks city government?
So it's not that different from the borough clerk's office in what we do. We serve the city council, our local governing body. The city clerk does. My staff and I are also responsible for records management for the city. I'm responsible for the city election, which, of course, we hold in conjunction with the Fairbanks North Star Borough and the city of North Pole. We also handle all the legislation of the city of Fairbanks, city council. But unlike the borough, we have very different services. So a lot of people think that maybe these governments are redundant, but that's really just not the case because the borough has a slew of different responsibilities than the city, and they very rarely overlap.
Okay. And of course, I could talk about it at length too, just because of my involvement. But I would say the biggest differences are probably city has police and borough doesn't, and the city does all the plowing for all the city roads. The borough has road service areas, though. We better not get into that. That's a can of worms. So the borough indirectly does some plowing through road service areas, but at any rate. Okay, so we have elections coming up. It's election season. We're starting to see signs pop up around the area, and we had candidate filing close, what was it, a couple days ago, Wednesday or Tuesday?
Tuesday
at 5 o'clock or 5:30, we had filing. And the filing periods are the same, right, for city and borough. Mm-hmm. Open the same time, close the same time, but they're in different locations, the two different clerk office. So we don't have our final list of candidates yet, do we?
No, we do not.
We have a, what would you call it?
Unofficial list.
Unofficial list. Mm-hmm. Pending list, unofficial list. And I did print out the list today before coming into the studio, and I noticed a change from the last time I had looked. And the change was over on the assembly side, not the Fairbanks side. And it looks like on seat B, where Brett Ruderman is the incumbent, he's filed for reelection, and a gentleman filed to challenge him. And that person, it says, now has withdrawn.
That's correct. He withdrew this morning.
So when we have an unopposed race like that, it means that that candidate is more or less the closest you can have guaranteed to reelection, with the possible exception of write-in candidate?
That's correct. Somebody could be file as a write-in candidate still. They still have that opportunity. You can declare yourself as a write-in candidate at the borough clerk's office. You do need to file a declaration as a write-in, and you do have to still file a POFD. And you can do that up to the day of the election.
Okay, POFD. Let's see if we can translate for the public here. If I remember, that is a personal financial disclosure?
That's correct. With we shorten it for APOC. So now what you're going to ask me to say, it's the Alaska Public...
Alaska Public Offices Commission, and then the POFD is Public Offices...
Financial disclosure.
There we go.
But anyway, I can translate what it is. So the candidate needs to list, and there's going to be technical qualifications, but generally it's going to be like every source of income over something like $1,000 in the previous year, business interests, spouses, sometimes their business interests as well, debts, those sorts of things. Just that way, I think the logic is that way a public member could look at that and try to determine if there could be some weird financial conflict when it comes to some future vote or official action, something like that. Just transparency in government there. But I'm going to read off the names real quick here. So on the assembly side, seat B, we have three assembly seats up, don't we?
Three
assembly seats. So we have Brett Roderman running now unopposed for seat B for re-election. Seat C is currently held by Mindy O'Neill, and she's termed out, so no incumbent running for re-election. We have Jeannie Olson running for that, Garrett Armstrong, and J.T. McCormick Rowe, three candidates for that seat.
McCummis Rowe.
And the other assembly seats we have, which is seat I, the third one, we have incumbent Barbara Heaney running for re-election, along with Patrick Roach. I hope I'm spelling that or pronouncing that right. And actually, did I print out? I thought I printed out the school board seats. Yeah. So we have Audra Hull, and we have, it looks like, with nickname of Sam for first name Spencer, both running for seat C, which is the seat that Brandy Hardy currently holds, and she is not running for re-election. And then we have seat D, Melissa Burnett running for re-election, along with Naomi Hewitt. So we have two-person races, and it looks like no IGU races this cycle.
That's correct.
And then any ballot initiatives on the borough side?
There are no ballot initiatives.
Are there any ballot initiatives on the city side?
No, sir. Not this year.
Okay, no. No direct democracy there on the city side this time. I know sometimes there is.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it seems like in the last few years, there's often been a question.
I think last year we did not have a question also. It's been a couple years.
Okay. On the city side here, we have, I'll just read them in order. We have Mindy O'Neill running for mayor. We have David Peruse, incumbent. So if he were to be reelected, I think he'll be termed out in 3 years, next mayoral cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And that also means, and there's a third candidate, James V. Begg. So especially, particularly when there's more than two candidates, there's a possibility of a runoff. I suppose there is even with two, because people could just write in, right? Even if there was no official write-in candidate, if the write-ins accumulated more than 20%, that by definition would, well, if the two normal candidates split evenly, if the write-ins got over 20%, that would force a runoff.
Yeah, that is possible.
I don't think that's ever going to happen, but... the runoff rules are if the mayoral candidate, the top vote getter, gets under 40%, that triggers a runoff.
They must receive more than 40% to not trigger a runoff. So 40.01 and above.
So a flat 40% would trigger a runoff if that's the top vote getter.
Over 40%.
Okay, flat 40%. Is it the same on the borough side?
That's correct.
Same language?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Unlikely that it's exactly 40, but you never know. Could definitely happen. I suppose will happen eventually. So we've got three running there for mayor. City council, we have Sue Sprinkle running for re-election and Hannah Ekeluk, hopefully I'm pronouncing her name right, challenging her. And then we have Crystal Tidwell unopposed. And I believe that rounds out the city slate of candidates that we have here.
Can I touch on something real quick?
Just
unlike the borough with our filing, the POFD that the folks filing for borough office would file with the state of Alaska, they would file it locally with the city clerk. We have our own financial disclosure statement because we've opted out of the APOC filing. So those are kept on file at the city clerk's office, not with the state.
So they don't do both, they do one or the other?
Correct. Municipalities may opt out of the state requirement as long as they have a similar requirement in place. And that's what the city did, I think, in 08 or 09.
And they have to do that by a proposition through the vote of the voters.
Oh, so that was a direct democracy thing where the city voters chose that. Mm-hmm. With that, we're going to come back and continue talking about local elections here in just a minute, but we're going to move over into a break. You're listening to 660 AM KFAR Problem Corner.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
The Valdez Fishing Report is brought to you by your local Fairbanks Jiffy Lube. Heading out for some weekend fishing? Make sure your vehicle's ready for the adventure. Stop by either the College or Pegger Road location and let the Jiffy Lube certified technicians get your vehicle in road trip ready shape. Jiffy Lube can help with Pennzoil oil changes, transmission services, air filters, wiper blades, and more. Stop by when it's convenient for you. No appointment necessary. Jiffy Lube proudly pours Pennzoil motor oil. Not just oil, Pennzoil.
It's time for the Valdez Fishing Report. Interviews, derby standings, tips, and advice for Prince William Sound.
Lori Prox here with Oren Lee of Caldwell, Idaho. You reeled in a 10.40-pound silver. You said you caught your limit in an hour out there, about 20 miles out.
Correct, yes, ma'am.
All right, and trolling. Sounds like a great day. The size of the other fish, you got a lot of fish, but pretty sizable silvers?
Yes, ma'am. They were all right around that size. We caught probably three pinks, but the silvers were all really big, really fat, pretty healthy fish.
Were you getting them at all different depths?
Yes, ma'am. We were using like the dipsy diver type thing, and it would take it down however far it takes it down. And the buzz bombs we were using, just trolling behind. And then we had the cannonball rigged up down. So, yeah, we were using several different things, and they were hitting on all of it.
And several different depths, it sounds like, as well?
Yes, ma'am.
Wow. So because the divers, you can't get too far, but how deep do you think you were going with the downriggers?
On the downriggers, probably 60, 70 foot. Right around in there.
And you were catching them at all levels?
All levels, yes, ma'am.
And did you get them all in?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Didn't we miss a one?
We had the several kings. We had three kings get off, but we limited on kings as well in about an hour.
The Valdez Fishing Report is brought to you by the Valdez Convention and Visitors Bureau. Of course, there's great fishing in Valdez, but plan to spend an extra day or two kayaking, taking a glacier cruise, or just hiking to take in the astounding views. For more information on tours, events, trails, and a place to lay your head, visit ValdezAlaska.org.
KVAK's Valdez Fishing Report. Fish Valdez and reel in a big one.
KFAR Weather.
Daytime highs approaching 78 today under mainly clear skies. Winds out of the northeast, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Mainly clear skies tonight. Lows level off around 54. A mix of clouds and sun tomorrow. Slight chance for isolated rain showers. Daytime highs approaching 77. And that's your weather on KFAR, 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
We're back live in the studio. This is 660 AM KFAR Problem Corner. And I'm Aaron Lojeski, your guest host. We have April Tricky, borough clerk, in the studio, as well as Danny Snyder. Am I pronouncing your last name right? Okay, city clerk in the office. So with our elections coming up, how can people vote?
There are a number of ways people can vote. They can vote absentee in person, and that begins in mid-September. They can request a ballot by mail or electronic transmission. They can stop at a polling place and vote. Even if it's not their polling place, they can still vote a question ballot. And I think I've covered all of the ways that you can vote.
Did you say early vote?
Oh, I did not say early vote. Yes, they can early vote before the election and up to the Thursday prior to the election.
Okay, and so I'm just, and it's the same for the borough, right?
That is correct.
But I'm just thinking what's different is there, okay, did you mention absentee in person?
Yes. And that's the one that starts the earliest.
Okay. Now, for absentee in person, the city is going to run, is this right? The city is going to run its own polling location.
Correct. We will have the borough and the city of Fairbanks ballot. We will not have the city of North Pole ballot at the city Fairbanks clerk's office.
Correct. And then at the North Pole city clerk's office, at their absentee station, they will have the borough ballot and also the city of North Pole's ballot. At the early vote station, which is conducted by the borough clerk's office, we will have all three ballots there. So someone can come and vote if they are a city of Fairbanks voter or a city of North Pole voter, and of course a borough voter, they can vote both the ballots if they are a city and borough voter. They'll be able to obtain both their ballots at the early vote station. And I would just say the difference between the early vote station and an in-person absentee station is the early vote station is ran just like a precinct. So when you go to the early vote station, you will receive your ballots, you will cast your ballots, and they will go through the precinct tabulator at that time. And the night of the election, those results are uploaded into our election management system, just like the precinct election results are, and they are part of the election night results, along with the 32 precincts that the borough has, along with the city 7 precincts for the city of Fairbanks and the North Pole precincts. The difference with the absentee in-person voting is that those ballots must be reviewed by our canvas board to review and verify that the voter is eligible to vote within the elections that they vote, whether it's a city ballot, a borough ballot, and make sure that they are qualified and that they have not voted in any other method of a way to vote in the October 7th election. So there is a review process, and then those ballots are counted at the final count vote day, which is October the 14th, which is a Tuesday.
Okay. So, and then I think there's something new, and I'm not sure if this will count for Fairbanks votes too, but if someone casts a vote at a early vote station, or I guess there's only one official early vote station, even though you can vote early by absentee, which is called absentee in person. I know it's all confusing in terms of the names, but an actual officially early vote, okay, which will be, is it going to be the same location or is that known?
It is not at the same location. It will not. The early vote station will not be at the Shoppers Forum this year. We are currently working on getting a location confirmed, and once we have that, we'll get that note out on our website and also on social media, so people
will
know.
Okay, and that's a big deal because I think the amount of people doing early voting has been skyrocketing for local elections recently.
That's correct. Last year we had over 3,100 people come through for early voting.
And if you want to count early voting, think of it as a precinct. That would make it the biggest precinct in the borough, right?
That is correct. It is the biggest precinct in the borough, if
would
you count that.
Would that be true for the city, too? Mm-hmm. More early votes in the early vote station than any individual precinct on election day?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But so the change, though, okay, there's going to be a change in location. That's super, super important. And then for some people, this might be important. For others, maybe not. But correct me if I'm not wrong, isn't there going to be some sort of like audit hand count to the early vote station?
Correct. So the assembly this spring adopted an ordinance to add a post manual verification audit. And so what that is that the canvas board will be conducting a manual verification audit for the early vote station and two randomly selected precincts. So what will happen is that we will randomly select a contested race on the borough ballot only. This is not for the city ballots. This is just for the borough election. And the selected contested race will be hand counted for all ballots cast at the early vote station. And the
You said all votes. Every race will be hand counted.
Not every race.
Nope.
One randomly contested race that is drawn. So
what that means is it will not be the Brett Rodermund race unless someone files an official write-in challenge, right?
That's
I know I'm getting into the weeds here.
Yeah, you're getting into the weeds there. So
you saw me for 6 years on this template. You know right. I ask these questions.
Exactly. So our code states that a write-in vote are not counted unless they exceed. So it would depend whether or not it would be considered contested. So I can't remember what the percentage is. So I wouldn't.
You need to go back and check code.
I would need to go back and check code. So that's correct.
But I can speculate here as the host that there's a high likelihood it would not be the Brett Roderman race as he's unopposed right now. So you'd be looking at one of the other two assembly seats or one of the two school board seats.
That's correct.
And what happens if there's a discrepancy between the hand count and the machine count?
If it is less than 1% discrepancy, the machine count stands. If it is more than 1% of a discrepancy, then a second hand count is required by code.
Okay, and that's all regulated by code there.
That's all regulated by code.
So the one detail that doesn't make sense to me then is what if someone won a race by one vote, the hand count came in and then showing them losing a race by one vote, so two-vote discrepancy out of, let's say, 10,000 ballots were cast, so it's within the 1 point. And now you have, even though they're very similar, they have different outcomes, you know? Like they're similar mathematically, but totally different outcome-wise.
Well, I would remind people that this manual verification audit is not a recount. So what we are looking at is they will be hand counting the ballots as the machines count the ballots. We are not looking at voter intent on the ballot. So if people have to. How they mark their ballots is how we are going to count those ballots. So if somebody, they have to mark them properly. So like when you go into the voting booth, it states how you should mark your ballot. So if you don't fill in the oval, but you circle the name,
mm-hmm.
the machine is going to count that ballot as a blank vote.
That's what I would expect.
And that's how we are going to count it through the manual verification audit. That's the process through that. A recount is where you get into voter intent. It's different.
Okay. Hopefully we don't ever have one of those or need to have one of those.
All right.
But the big picture here mm-hmm. is this what I'm thinking that people should know. One, we don't know where the early vote station is, and it wouldn't surprise me if in excess of 3,000 people choose to utilize that again between city voters, well, North Pole city voters as well, Fairbanks
Correct.
City voters, and borough voters. So it's likely to be a very popular way of voting, and then voters should know if on the borough ballot they want their vote to be, are we calling this an audit, hand
it's
count audit?
It's a post-audit.
If they want their borough vote to be randomly hand count audited, or one of the races, I guess I should say, they should vote early. If they don't want that hand count audit, I guess it could still happen on election day, but it's much less likely that their individual ballot gets selected because it'll be a random two precincts.
That's
out of 20 some precincts, 32. So yeah, much lower chance. So I know some voters are going to want to do that. They're going to want to have their vote audited, because I know that there's been, you know, national media and locally there's been some distrust mm-hmm. of some of the voting machines. So that's awesome that voters can choose. And if they want that on the city, then they better start talking to city council to get the rules changed, right?
Right. The council has not adopted any ordinance related to an audit at this time.
So that would be a future project for a citizen if that's a change they would like to see. And then also on the borough side, if they want to see everything hand counted, because I know there's some people, they need to start talking to the borough assembly or run a ballot initiative for direct democracy to choose that, right?
That would be important.
Right. We're going to come back in just a moment.
For your Alaska News Minute.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
.com.
News. Jean Saucier. President Trump says he's ordered two nuclear submarines to be positioned in regions near Russia. This is a response to threats from former Russian President Dmitry Medvedev. He warned the President Trump that Russia has Soviet-era nuclear strike capabilities. On Truth Social, President Trump writes, I've ordered two nuclear submarines to be positioned in the appropriate regions just in case these foolish and inflammatory statements are more than just that. U.S. Ambassador to Israel Mike Huckabee criticizing countries, saying they would recognize a Palestinian state if Israel doesn't agree to a two-state solution with Hamas. Huckabee appeared remotely from Israel on the Brian Kilmeade Show on Fox News Radio.
They're really helping Hamas by demanding a Palestinian state and condemning Israel. Hamas loves that. But do you know who's taken the other side against Hamas? All of the Arab Gulf states, like the Saudis, the Emiratis, the Qataris. That ought to tell you something.
America's listening to Fox News.
Radio Kenai reports the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has announced an increase in sport fishing limits for sockeye salmon on the Russian River and a section of the Upper Kenai River effective Thursday, July 31st through Wednesday, August 20th, 2025. Anglers will now be allowed to harvest up to 6 sockeye salmon per day with a total possession limit of 12. The regulation change applies to the Russian River from its mouth upstream to a department marker approximately 600 yards below the Russian River Falls and to the mainstream Upper Kenai River between Skelak Lake and the Sterling Highway Bridge at the outlet of Kenai Lake. As of July 29th, more than 15,000 sockeye salmon had passed the Russian River Weir with a projected escapement of over 74,000 fish, well within the sustainable escapement goal of 44,000 to 85,000. Additionally, over 2.5 million sockeye have entered the Kenai River system this season. Based on those numbers, biologists expect the Russian River's late run to surpass its escapement goal. So fish on!
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
Don't let summer slip by without a journey to Valdez to experience the majestic Prince William Sound with Stan Stevens Glacier and Wildlife Cruises. Relax on their comfortable vessels as you explore the fjords and passageways of the Sound to Columbia or Mears Glacier. See marine bird and wildlife, including seals, sea otters, sea lions, porpoise, humpback whales, orca whales, puffins, eagles, and more. Tour rates begin at $170, so call 866-867-1297 to book your trip with the experts in the Sound, Stan Stevens Cruises. Ask for your Alaska resident discount when booking.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
Just a little heads up before something bad happens.
Move your coffee cup away from your computer.
Oh, no, 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 no.
So you can have more control.
Stop. You're texting your boss by mistake.
Uh-oh. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Warning, the cap is loose on that ketchup.
Ugh. Don't wait. You have the power to change the outcome. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Got that one tree hanging over your house? Or you need a bunch of trees removed for fire safety? The one to call is the Great Alaska Tree Company. They specialize in hazardous tree cutting and removal, especially in tight quarters. Great Alaska Tree Company gives you the most complete tree service with stump grinding, brush cutting, chipping, and even pruning. Licensed, bonded, insured. Everyone loves the Great Alaska Tree Company. Well, everyone but the squirrels, that is. Call Eric today for your free estimate and year-round and emergency service at 978-4702.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM.
And streaming live at kfarradio.com.
We're back on the radio here. This is, it's Melissa's fault. She was distracting us. And now she's glaring at us, at me. We're live in the studio. This is Aaron Lojeski, your guest host here. We have borough clerk and city clerk here. And next up, I'd like to move into human resources. I know there's a lot of people who want to help the elections run smoothly. Who do they talk to if they want to become a poll worker?
If they'd like to become a poll worker for the local election, please contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-459-1401 and let them know that that's what you're calling about. And the person who answers the phone will transfer you guys to the one of the staff members on our team that recruits poll workers. We are currently in the process of doing that. We have sent out our letters to our chairs. Our chairs are actively recruiting. We also recruit election workers and help out the chairs. We are looking for a chair for Goldstream number one. Our chair who typically works that is not available this year. So if you live out in the Goldstream one area, or if you are willing and would like to step up to be a chair and you've worked elections before, we'd love for you to do that.
Goldstream one. Correct. Is that the Ivory Jack side or is that like the Fox side of Goldstream?
It's the fire station.
Which is, I haven't driven Goldstream Road in a while. That's the actual polling station.
That's the polling station. And then the other side is Ken Kunkel. So I think if you know that area, like you'll know which side that is. So.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Ken Kunkel is right next to Ivory Jack. So that would be the more Fox side, I think. Right. Assuming the polling location is placed in precinct. I know occasionally they're out. Some of the city precincts, I think the polling stations might be, because a precinct might not have a venue that's appropriate, you know, for that precinct. So it's in a nearby area. Yep. Okay, so Goldstream 1, which sounds like it's the more Fox side, needs a chair.
That's
correct.
But
it does have normal workers who have already signed up?
We have some workers that have signed up. We have a person who is a co-chair there. He's a strong co-chair, so we just need someone to take the leadership role there at Goldstream 1.
And didn't the election workers get a raise in the last couple of years?
They have gotten a raise.
I wonder who did that.
Well, the assembly gave them a raise, and
Who made the motion?
I think that might have been a former assembly member named former assembly member Lajewski.
I got to toot my own horn a little bit. Okay. But poll workers should be paid. You know, they shouldn't be shortchanged. What is the pay though?
For election workers working at the poll, it's $20.50 an hour.
$20.50 an hour.
Correct.
And it's usually, is it usually an 8-hour day, 12-hour day, or what?
Well, it depends. It can be longer than that because the polls open at 7 o'clock in the morning and they go till 8. Some people will work a full day. They will typically get there at 6:30 in the morning. And once polls close, they have work to do to complete polling closing procedures, and they could work until 9 or 9:30. Some workers will just work the morning shift. Some will work the evening shift. Some will come in and just relieve people for lunch. So there's opportunities. You don't have to work the full day. You can just come in and fill a shift too. So,
okay. And then there's also a training ahead of time, right?
That is correct. We do a training every year, and we like it to be mandatory, especially for people who are new. It's also just a great refresher because you only do this once a year. And it's nice to have that refresher. And a lot of people who work the local municipal elections also work the state elections. But there isn't a state election this year. And I always say that we do things very similar to the state, but we are just a little bit different because of our municipal codes are a little bit different than state statutes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you want to work an election, contact the borough clerk's office.
Correct.
And when's the deadline for that?
I would say do it as soon as possible. I always tell people continue to contact us because we have people who will sign up, and unfortunately life happens. People get sick, you know, or they have to go outside, leave the state due to family emergencies, and we are always trying to fill in spots. So we always try to have a list of workers who are willing to work. So even if we can't assign you a spot, we try to have that list. So if you're willing to take a phone call from myself or one of my deputies at, 6:30 in the morning and say, unfortunately, I can't get people at a polling place. Can you please go to a polling place for me? We always ask those kind of questions so that we have people on standby. And some people work and sometimes they don't get that call, but at least we have people who are willing to do that.
So if you wanted to be on standby, you'd want to be monitoring your phone the day of, mm-hmm. including the morning of, and then you'd go to the training so that you're ready.
Correct.
And then
we pay
it.
You for the training. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And let's see here. I'm just thinking of one other thing. Oh, what's the minimum age to be a poll worker?
So
I
the
know
minimum,
that's a recent change.
The minimum age is 18 years old to be a poll worker. But within code, we do have youth workers from 16 and 17 year olds can work. But the requirement is we can only have one youth worker assigned to a precinct. And we do require that the youth worker attend mandatory training. We're already getting applications in for some youth workers that are being assigned to some precincts. So that is great. It's really nice. I really enjoy doing the training for the youth. We try to have just a little bit of civics in there with that. And the goal is that we've already seen that some of our youth workers who started doing this when that code got changed, they are now regular poll workers at the polls. And that's really exciting to see because it's nice to have some younger workers working at the polls just to help out. Because unfortunately, when you get old, those knees get to hurting when you have to get down on the ground to put some of those that equipment up. So
better than the alternative. Yeah. Danny, City Clerk, you wanted to talk about the election pamphlet.
Yeah, the election pamphlet. And I think, I'm not sure if the borough changed the name in its code, but we used to call it the candidate pamphlet. And because it contains everything you need to know about the local elections, we've changed that to become the election information pamphlet or something of that nature. Anyway, it was a great addition to our local elections 3 years ago, I think, and it was a collaborative effort between the municipalities. We have everything about your polling locations, absentee voting locations, times, dates, deadlines, sample ballots, candidate bios, and nonpartisan statements, all in there. That is assuming each candidate submitted one. Candidates are not required to submit one. We can put bare minimum information in there, but most candidates do usually submit. We'll have that full color pamphlet ready to hand out by the end of August, hopefully a little earlier than that. And then each of our municipalities has a copy of that, a PDF of that online if you don't want the paper copy. But if you do want the paper copy, stop by our offices and we'll be happy to hand you one. Just one note about that is that when you go to your polling place on election day to vote, having that pamphlet out and displayed is considered electioneering. So just tuck it in your pocket or in your bag or wherever when you go in to vote and don't leave it in the voting booth.
Even the pamphlet, which is that surprised me that would be considered electioneering if that was left in a voting booth. On the borough side, does the borough have the election pamphlet?
That's correct. We do. It's the same. Okay. It's a joint pamphlet. So pamphlet will have both the borough and both cities' information in there. So it's a one-stop shopping.
Does it have North Pole in there too?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay. And same thing, the candidates for North Pole have to put in their information. Otherwise, it's just going to be what? Name? An address? Something like that?
Pretty much what you see on the filing list. Yeah. Name, address, phone number, email.
Okay. And I'm sure, well, actually, I've seen the pamphlet a little bit. I know sometimes there's typos in there because you're not going to correct a candidate's language. It's all going to be exactly as submitted and so forth, which people should know. If there's a typo, it's not the clerk's fault.
That is correct.
Thank you, Aaron.
That's right. It's their grammar. It's their spelling.
It is what it is. Let's see here. We have just about a minute before the break. But actually, when we come back, I would like to ask you, Danny, it goes into the side conversation we're having before we got on the radio, about the one instance that I'm aware of really genuine, massive fraud in an election going way back in Fairbanks history, before the borough was around. Don't worry, April, I can see you getting worried. Back in the early 1900s about a historical figure in Fairbanks. And I'm sure you have some information on that, being the city clerk. Or at least access to records, right, that a historian could look at, a citizen historian. So we've got a break coming up here in about, we're going to move into the break right now, and we'll see you on the other side. This is KFAR Problem Corner.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Amy Seiberlich here to tell you about Health Talk. Every Saturday at noon, join Dr. Scott Looper from White Spruce Medical and special guests like me who have our fingers on the pulse of Fairbanks Golden Heart. Learn about a wide range of topics and pick up some beneficial health tips and practical health information pertinent to interior Alaskans. Listen live every Saturday at noon or online anytime at KFARradio.com. Health Talk with Dr. Looper, brought to you by White Spruce Medical. Check us out at whitesprucemedical.com.
Imagine a job where your evenings and weekends are yours. Fastenal is hiring in Fairbanks, part-time or full-time, with a Monday through Friday, 8 to 5 schedule. Get competitive pay, full benefits, and real career growth with training, mentorship, and room to rise. No experience is needed. Backed by a Fortune 500 company with global reach, this is more than just a job. It's your path forward. Family time, flexibility, and a future you can count on. Apply now at Fastenal.com and start building something bigger.
Listen to KFAR Monday through Friday at 7:40 a.m. and 2:03 p.m. for the Precious Metals Report, brought to you by Gold Buyers of Alaska. You can trust Gold Buyers of Alaska and their incredible attention to detail. Buy or sell gold, silver, bullion, investment metals. Protect your wealth and build your individual retirement account with Gold Buyers of Alaska, 915 30th Avenue. The Precious Metals Report, Monday through Friday on KFAR at 7:40 a.m. and 2:03 p.m. Gold Buyers of Alaska.
KFAR weather.
High of 78 today, under mainly clear skies, northeast winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Lows around 54 tonight, mainly clear skies. Slight chance for isolated rain showers tomorrow, highs around 77, sunshine mixed with clouds at times. That's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Derek Height.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM.
And streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to us live in the studio. I am Aaron Lojeski, your guest host. We've got both city clerks here. And I'll start by sharing what I know about the one instance of really, I would say, extreme voter fraud and its history, too. And a lot of folks in Fairbanks know about it. I think a lot of people don't. But I have never looked at source documents, and I'm pretty sure, Danny, your office could help me get some of those source documents like a historian. But the story goes that E.T. Barnett came into Fairbanks, founded Fairbanks, right, and got the paperwork in to create the city government of Fairbanks back in, I don't know if the actual organization would have been like 1902 or 1903. What's the official?
The official date is November 10th, 1903.
So the actual legal formation of the city would have been 2003, although physically Fairbanks was already getting founded before that. So 2003. And the story goes, and I actually did, now that I think about it, I did look up a historical voter return somewhere online. I don't think it was like a scanned document, so it probably wasn't primary source. But there were three serious candidates who ran for mayor. And I don't think there were any non-serious ones, like, you know, who got like two votes or whatever. And I'm wanting to say from memory that there may have been a few hundred votes. Let's just say 300. And there would have been, it was close to an even split, close enough, right? Everyone was actually competitive. And E.T. Barnett, the guy who founded Fairbanks, ran, which kind of makes sense. You found a city, you're like, okay, I want to be the first mayor. But E.T. Barnett also did not have the best reputation for ethics, let's just say, okay? And I think word was already getting out. And so he didn't get the most votes. He got the second most, which is still pretty good, but it's not, it wouldn't get you elected. And they must not have had the runoff language, because I suppose under current code, that would have triggered a mayoral runoff. The top two vote getters would have moved on, because I believe they all got under 40%. But at any rate, the story goes that he had a lot of friends on city council, so it must have been the newly elected city council, and he just went to them, and he kind of twisted their arms, and he got them to declare him the winner, even though he had the second most votes. So, I mean, I guess they didn't necessarily, I mean, do any fraud with the vote, but they just declared the loser the winner. And then I guess it was the case. That's how we got our first mayor.
Yeah, I would encourage you, Mr. Lojeski, to put in a public record request so we can all find out the true story on that.
It would. So there should be records of the meeting where that election was certified.
We have all of the handwritten meeting minutes dating back to 1903 to the first meeting of the town council, which was what it was then called.
And it must have been, I don't think the territory of Alaska was formed until the 19-teens, I'm wanting to say. So it must have been the District of Alaska, which was the legal organization prior to that, that this town council would have been formed under.
Yeah,
but it's been a continuously operating city government since that first town council, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so you're part of that history here as the city clerk.
Yep.
And of course, the borough is considerably newer, which means you maybe don't have to worry about handwritten notes from the 1960s.
We do actually, our minutes are not handwritten, but we do have records that are handwritten.
Because that was well before computers becoming broadly implemented.
Correct. And if you remember, some of the parks and recreation facilities the city actually had, and then they were given to the mm-hmm. borough. So
Pioneer Park is a good example.
Which was Alaska land,
mm-hmm.
was given. And those records that I know that my staff has scanned electronic, many of them were handwritten.
Yeah. Hmm. And it's interesting, those early handwritten minutes, I've touched them, and it's just incredible to see a document that old, you know, relating to your own city's history. But they are actually housed at the university archives. And we had a project in 2014 where we brought binder after binder back physically to our office and scanned those. And then we had an agreement with the university to do that and then put them back up. While the city owns those records, they care for them.
So we have a digital record. So if they get destroyed by something that eats
old
paper or fire or whatever,
yep.
we got them backed up.
Yep. The problem that we have is that I don't know if there's current technology that'll read those documents handwritten. So we're doing that as a project in the office with our own human eyes, trying to decipher, you know, what was handwritten in those minutes.
Hmm.
Yes. And the copies aren't so great, I'll say.
So if I do an information request for the first, I don't know, few meetings, all the minutes, I should be able to get those. Would the minutes typically include an account of what citizens were saying during citizen comment? I'm assuming they had that.
Yeah. You know, the meeting minutes back then were so brief. I don't see that early on a lot of citizen involvement unless there was a report requested from like a committee or something like that. That's really only what I've seen in those early minutes.
Well, if the city council was going to declare the loser of a mayoral election the winner, you would hope that the people supporting the actual biggest vote getter would have shown up and made their voices
and
known.
Well, you and I weren't there, so there's a chance that they did and it just didn't make it into the minutes. I don't know.
Yeah, they might have, or who knows, maybe they were blindsided and maybe the city council just suddenly did this and there was no sign of it and it just happened. That wouldn't surprise me either.
Yeah.
But yeah, history can be interesting like that. Do you have any more comments on the modern elections here?
2025? My final comment would be, I don't think we've actually mentioned the election date this year is October 7th. So it's the first Tuesday in October, and it happens to be a little later this year. So just don't forget to get out and vote on or before October 7th.
If it's later, that means we're probably more likely to have snow. I know sometimes we have snow before the muni elections.
Don't say it. Most likely we will have snow, unfortunately.
There we have a weather prediction from the borough clerk.
No.
It always happens. It always seems like there's always the first snow on election day.
Which means you can vote early while the weather is hopefully still good for driving.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. And I would say the early vote station, we will be open on September the 22nd. It's a Monday. And once we get that location, we will start getting it out on our website. We're going to post it out on social media. And we'll get it out on the city clerk's websites, too. So or you can always call our office if you have any questions. Our websites have a lot of detailed information regarding deadlines for when to turn in your absentee ballot application into the borough clerk's office. So if you're a city resident and you do want to vote absentee by mail or electronic, please turn it into the borough clerk's office. All of that comes through the borough clerk's office. We keep everything together as we conduct these elections together for ease and also
cost.
Expense. It really does help that we are able to run our elections together. It saves the taxpayers of this borough and the cities a lot of money that the three municipal clerks work together and are able to do that. So.
And I will add to that, you probably won't, either of you, due to professionalism, that if there's ever a change in date of one local election, I hope that they all move together, which would require cooperation of all the three governments, you know, because I think that would be very confusing if the city moved a month and the borough didn't, or vice versa, or if North Pole did and the other two didn't, or whatever, you know. And then that would make it difficult to cooperate too, right?
It would make it difficult to do that. And I would say that, you know, being involved in local elections for many years, I've been fortunate to do that. And I've always seen the all three municipalities working together at least since the 80s. And I think it's a great working relationship that we've had and that we've been able to save our taxpayers' monies to do that. And I really do support that, and I think that that is the best interest of our communities, to be able to work together in our local election. It happens every year, and I know so many people forget that we have a local election that happens every year, and sometimes we get overshadowed with the state and federal elections. But we're here, and I will have to say one thing about it, and I'm going to plug local government. What happens at local government and what happens at a local elections, I believe, affects our daily lives more than other elections.
Amen.
Well, it affects I live in the city now. That's all city plowing, except for in a handful of DOT streets. But the majority of the plowing in the city is city and police.
And your garbage service and your public safety response. Yeah, all of that.
The garbage service, both for the borough, and some areas have lower levels of service, but it's still service, and the landfill too, which is for everybody.
I like my transfer station.
Well, we got a couple minutes here left, and what I'll ask you technically, and I'm not going to name any names, okay? Because I think I could, well, I'm not going to name any names, but I did a little bit of background research on a few of the candidates running. Again, I'm not naming any names. One of the candidates, I checked Court View, and I found like 30, 40 records came back. 15 of them, I think, were criminal. And I went up and checked a couple of my old voter databases. I couldn't find that particular person as being a registered voter on a voter list I purchased last year and one from the year before. And it raises questions to me if this person is actually qualified, because maybe they're not registered to vote, or maybe, I don't know. So what's the process? This is an unofficial list. Does this mean that you have to do like additional just check, you know, vetting just to make sure they meet all the legal qualifications to be on the ballot, or what?
Absolutely. I can't speak for April, but from the date of the filing closing period, which is July 29th, unless that date falls on a weekend, through that whole next week is our time, or my time generally, to start researching and certifying that a candidate is eligible to run in the city election. And generally, we have that done around the time that the candidate withdrawal date, which is a week after the candidate filing date, and that is on August 5th. So that's next Tuesday.
Yeah. So throughout the candidate filing process, I do go through and start qualifying candidates, and because one of the things that's required once somebody declares and files it. With the clerk's office, they're required to file their candidate registration form with APOC or their municipal exemption form, basically how they're going to campaign, how they're going to report their expenditures for that 7 days after candidate filing. So there are those qualifications that they're required to do that could disqualify someone if they don't do that timely. You know, I'm looking at the 1 year residency. I'm verifying that they are a registered voter. And I'm trying to think about, I think those are kind of the main ones, you know, that they filed. So those are the things that we're looking at. And once that withdrawal period comes out, we will come out with our official list, and our official list will have all the candidates that are qualified.
Any final word?
Vote local, October 7th.
Okay, you were listening to A Problem Corner, KFAR 660 AM. Have a great day, Fairbanks and North Pole.
News and conversation. KFAR 660 AM Fairbanks. K248DK 97.5 FM Fairbanks. The heartbeat of Alaska.
How to get to Sesame Street. I'm Chris Foster, Fox News. It'll be harder in some parts of the country with the Corporation for Public Broadcasting shutting down, a longtime goal of Republicans who accuse it of political bias. It was set up in 1967 to distribute federal funds for